Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cheers, Ben.
Cheers.
I don't have many industry people on. I'd like to have more on. Here's why I don't have as many on as I should. Often people feel like they can't tell the true stories because they have to keep their professional reputation intact.
Yes.
There's one guy in particular, I won't name him and shame him, but I was chatting to him the other night, and he used to do PR for some of the most legendary 90s bands, and he used to get up to all sorts with them, and I was like, you got to come on the show. And he's like, well, if I came on the show and told you what went on, then I wouldn't have a job anymore. Obviously that's not the case with you, but you know, your industry, your lane that you're in, it relies very much on people relationships. So obviously today I'm going to grill you because you're my mate, and I'm going to ask you these questions. It's then up to you how much information you want to go, into.
Okay.
So as long as you know that's the caveat from the start.
Yes. I think I was prepared for that. Yeah. Obviously, a bit apprehensive on some levels, and I have to.
Well, you need to be
careful what I say.
I want to break you in gently with some Birmingham stories, because for me, and this is why I love being friends with you and I love our connection and history, our shared history, is when I was a kid, some of my earliest shows and some of my formative experiences, a live show, was watching your band, which is crazy. But Pignut was the group, legendary Birmingham ska punk band, at least for me.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
Not legendary for that many people, but.
I don't know why I remember this, but I'll always remember the lyric, "Another day for me, Birmingham seems so empty. I want to be somebody not like all the rest." And it's mad that I remember that, but I think the reason I do is because, you know, I was seeing bands like Goldfinger at the Foundry and Weezer and System of a Down and Less Than Jake at the old Carling Academy, and I was seeing these big American bands, but when I saw you guys, I was like, they're singing about stuff which is relatable to me, and this is a band that I can relate to. And I remember the night before Kev, who was the drummer and singer in Pignut, before he moved to Leeds, I don't think you were there, but it was me, Kev, and Johnny, and my friend Josh, and we were like 16 at the time, me and Josh were, so those guys would have been, 19, 20, yeah. And we're in Snobs, so we're in there illegally, and me and my friend Josh, we were smoking a spliff in the club, and I just remember Johnny and Kev were like, well, they didn't say this to us, but they must have thought, who are these kids that we've met, who are essentially fans of our band? They're now out for Kev's last night, and we're smoking weed in Snobs. Good times. So Kev moved up here. What brought you up to Leeds? You're from Birmingham originally, right?
Yep. From Birmingham, well, Sutton Coldfield, just outside of Birmingham. I came up to Leeds to go to university.
Right, makes sense.
And been here since.
You that was literally what happened. You never looked back.
Yes.
Yeah. Were you already doing shows and things like that in Birmingham, or did that come way later after uni?
It was weird. I think how it started, like, you know, a lot of industry people do. I started in a band myself, as you said.
Legendary Scarpunt.
Well, no, it wasn't actually before. I didn't join Pignuts until after I came to uni, after I came to Leeds. So,
right.
Yeah, I think I joined. I joined the band back in Birmingham when I was already in Leeds and had to go back for practices, etc. I was in bands, you know, from the age of 15 or, well, earlier than that, but, you know, whether you can call them bands, you know, there's no gigs, it's just mates practicing. But yeah, I think around the age of 16, you know, got in bands. I think Wedge was one of the first ones that we were playing shows in, and we're playing shows at was it the Faculty in Firkin and the Black Horse around the Aston University area.
Did you support anyone big?
No, that was just local band circuit. So we were doing local bands, and I was the one who, I don't know, organizing the gigs to some extent. I think I can remember me booking it with the venue, and I think we did one at the Irish Centre,
amazing place,
which was a kind of circuit band, on the band circuit, should we say, and they, you know, I can remember organizing all that and, you know, working out, selling the tickets and doing that, and that gave me sort of the bug for organizing gigs.
So it was a super organic thing.
Yeah. It was basically I started my first shows I was promoting and running were basically for my own band. Putting the gigs on, and then the actual, you know, it was only for our band and for friends' bands, you know, booking sport bands and organizing that kind of thing. I didn't actually start doing touring bands till I came to university, and I got a part-time job with the events department of the Student Union of Leeds, Leeds Metropolitan University it was back then, and I started doing the technical side, so as a technician, doing sound, lights, you know.
So you're kind of learning all of it.
Yeah, which is, you know, to this day has given me a great, you know, such a great foundation.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Because I've got the, you know, a bit of technical background and knowledge, I would say. So I'm quite good with production stuff. So I went to university doing that, and I was doing that on the same time as doing a university course, which
was your degree in
technology and management.
Okay, so it was broadly applicable.
It was more of an engineering course.
Okay, so not really related.
Yeah, no, it wasn't music anyway. And then basically, I started doing that, and then I can't remember at what point I started doing gigs, but I think it was.
When was the last time you thought about this? This is what's
it's just getting it in proper order,
in chronological order.
I started using the Birmingham and Leeds connections that I knew a band was playing in Birmingham. So I got the show through the contacts of Birmingham. I got the show to Leeds. So Real Big Fish was the first one. So
so the Birmingham show would be announced and on sale.
Yeah, I think that was it. I think
you go, let's see if we can get them up here as well.
Yeah, so I did that.
That's super punk rock.
Yeah, there. And I got the, funny enough, my early claim to fame was I did the very first Real Big Fish show in Europe, because they were coming over to play Boma on a tour, and I spoke to their agent, Ian Armstrong, and said, oh, they're playing in Birmingham. And he said, can they come to Leeds? And he said, oh, we can add a date at the start of the tour and they can do Leeds first. So they got them, put them on at the Cockpits in Leeds.
Wow, first European show.
Yeah,
what year was that?
So 2001. It was in January 2001.
And from that moment on, I seem to remember seeing them about three or four times in the next couple of years. Yeah. But that was the first time right there. That was like the Watergate moment.
Yeah, and like, obviously,
a watershed moment, should I say.
Yeah. And then around the same time, so I was doing gigs in Leeds and Burton, and then sometimes there was a band playing in, I knew a band was going to play Leeds, so then I managed to get a show in Birmingham, putting bands on at the Foundry. And then, because obviously this was all in this style of music, I'd joined Peak Nut, and then, which was, you know,
Scarpunk,
which then, so I was mainly putting on Scarpunk bands. So Real Big Fish, I did Goldfinger back in Birmingham.
At the Foundry.
Foundry.
That was one of my first ever gigs. Yeah. I was 14 at that one, and that was an 18 and over. Yeah. I remember me and my friend Josh were like, we'll get leather jackets, because that's what adults wear. So we had these leather jackets that we got from Oasis Market, fake ID, which we didn't even need. They didn't ID us. We were 14. Yeah. Maybe that's why it shut down. And I remember that gig well. Amazing show.
Yeah, and because obviously then I was using the connections too, you know, which is... Yeah, it's scary to think about it now, but actually getting, you know, booking these bands and booking my own band to support them. So that's, you know, how you saw us, because, you know, I put a Goldfinger on in Birmingham and I put my own band to support.
Do you know what, though? That right there for me, obviously, as you evolve and become more successful, you have to play by the rules a little bit more, because that winds people up the wrong way. But that right there for me is an example of, I think, why we... or, you know, as friendly as we are with each other beyond just the work connection, is because I think we have that same attitude of like, here's the idea, let's get out there and chase the dream.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, it gave me a great start. And like at the same, around that time as well, the guy that did, you know, I was still on the technical side in the student union part-time and doing my course, the guy, the events coordinator who... the in-house promoter of the student union, the full, you know, he was a full-time proper member of staff. He left. He got a job in London at a record company or something like that. He left, moved to London. I can remember as soon as I found out, I went into like the main boss, Simon Bell, gave me my big chance, because I literally walked in and said, so here, Darren's moving to London. He's leaving his job. I was like, if I drop out of university, can I have his job? And he just went, yeah, okay. And I literally, that, you know, that weekend, remember, I went home, told my parents.
How did they take that news? Were they
much
mad,
better?
Or were
no, much better than expected, because, you know, on track to do, like, I was going into engineering design, and to go back and sort of tell them to, you know, I'm dropping out of university to go and work in music and.
To book gigs at the university pub.
Yeah. And they were very supportive. Can't thank them enough for that. And I mean, ultimately, I always say this, that, you know, I was given the opportunity, and not many people were, you know, I was going to do a career, and what I thought I wanted to do as a career, as a job, is, you know, what I trained to do, doing engineering, doing design. And I was given the opportunity to do my hobby as a full-time job, which, you know,
is the dream.
Is the dream. And I did think about it hard, but I took the chance and I did it. And I'm sure no regrets. It's
we're still taking chances 15 years later,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's the way it goes. So Slam Dunk as a brand, as a business, How does that start? Is it a club night first? Is it a label first?
Yeah.
How does Slam Dunk become Slam Dunk?
So it was all around that time where, so I put Real Big Fish on. I didn't, because I was working at the student union. It was a big 1,000 capacity venue and they were a bit too small at that point for this big venue. So I couldn't do it as part of my main job. So I went to the smaller venue in town, which was the Cockpit, and said, you know, can we, you know, basically, well, I'll put Real Big Fish on in that venue, which I did. And then soon after that, the owner of the Cockpit came to me and said, you know, I want to do a club night, and, you know, with this ska punk, this new music that all the kids are into, you know about that. Do you want to come and help us set up this night? And I was still working at student union. I said, yeah, of course. And so I went to, so I was kind of working at the student union, but then moonlighting at the Cockpit doing this, start off this ska punk night, which was,
you, you're seeing opportunity, you're seizing opportunity.
Yeah.
And you're really, although the student union job seems like the dream because you're getting to work in music, I guess already you're thinking, I'd rather be putting on bands that I like than,
yeah, I mean,
you know, or am I reading too much?
That's
that?
It. You're giving me a bit too much credit there, I think. Yeah. I don't think I was, you know, I wasn't reading, thinking, well, I've got to go and do this now. I was offered it, yeah, a lot of it. I was presented with opportunities and took it. So, yeah, he said, do you want to come and do this? I was Colin, who now is still my partner to this day.
Is he really?
Wow. Yeah, Colin Oliver. He and very good friend of mine, Richard Todd, who's left now, but it was the two of them that, you know, own the Cockpit and, you know, and, you know, running all the shows and club nights there. They come to the Cockpit, do this ska punk night, which I did.
And this is 2002?
No, 2001. It was literally it was a couple of months after that Real Big Fish show. Real Big Fish was in the January. This thing, Slam Dunk, started in March. I didn't come up with the name. A lot of people say, how did you come up with the name? I didn't. It was Colin and the other DJ, Marcus. They came up with the name. There's different stories of how they come up with it, which is funny. But,
well, it's just that quintessential kind of American high school.
Yeah.
It just tied in with that.
Yeah.
That, you know, the genres of music that, you know, to this day the brand still celebrates and champions.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's cool as well, and we'll get into this in a lot more detail, I'm sure, is in the UK, people might forget, but in the UK at that time, certainly from my experience, there was bands like Farce and King Prawn and Cat Down.
Yeah.
And the ska scene in the UK and the kind of the DIY roots level underground music scene in the UK was really thriving.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
that
was, yeah, like you say, there was, you know, the bigger bands that we were, you know, all listening to, you know, Real Big Fish, Less Than Jake, Goldfinger, Mad Caddies, that, you know, there's this staple US bands, but there was also a UK ska scene there, which was great. Like you say, those bands, and they were coming up at the same time. You know, they weren't as big, but they were certainly coming up. You know, Cap Down being, I think, you know, one of the biggest UK ska punk bands at that time. You know, I was putting them on a lot. It's quite funny now you mention it. It's with the ska punk, when the American bands were coming through, there was that UK scene, which was good, which wasn't the same with the pop punk scene, I feel. So the time that when Blink, Sum 41, Green Day, when they were breaking, you know, there was a big sort of DIY punk scene and everything, but there was the pop punk was a lot, you know, that was so American. It was, you know, years before we started to see UK pop punk started flourish. So the ska scene was really good for UK bands.
And it was diverse and all the bands were, you know, unique and offered something special. And I think maybe why that was because obviously ska has its roots in the UK.
Yeah.
With the original two-tone movement. So maybe that's why, you know, a band like King Prawn, they're not referencing, Real Big Fish at all with what they do. They're Public Enemy and the Specials. And but it was such an amazing time. And so you're putting on these club nights, and are you playing just ska at the club nights, or are you also playing pop punk, emo, metal?
It changed.
Or is it not really strict?
Yeah, no, it changed a bit. So when it originally started, so Slumdog, when it originally started, there was two rooms. The main room was metal, mainly, with bits of, with the pop punk that was breaking at the time, you Blink, Sum 41, etc. Then it was the back room that was then strictly ska punk.
Right.
And fair enough, obviously, I provided the DJ. So it was the Leeds DJ was Marcus, the original, you know, he was the Leeds rock guy. So the back room, obviously, I found the DJ, and it was, of course, Ed from Pignut. He was DJing already a ska punk back room at Edwards.
Eddie's number 8, yeah, R.I.P.
Yeah, so he was already an established DJ doing this kind of music. So I got him. He didn't drink, so he literally drove up to Leeds and back every Tuesday night. Or it was actually Wednesday night when it originally started, but we moved it to Tuesday quite quickly. So he was driving up and back, and Marcus was doing the main room. And I can't remember how soon. I don't think it was only a couple of months in. We changed the format. Ed actually finished DJing. And then basically, the funny thing was, I started DJing myself with my friend Liam, also from Birmingham, funnily enough.
Would I know him?
No. He was in the earlier bands with me, Liam Bremner. He was in the earlier bands, but he wasn't in Pignut. So he had come up to university the year before me, so he was already in Leeds. The two of us started DJing, and I think it was about the same time we switched the rooms, because the metal was also on the, you know, Saturday nights, and basically the pop punk was really growing as well. And it was almost like, because originally it was the metal and pop punk in one room and ska punk in the other room, and I quickly worked out that obviously the pop punk and the ska punk fitted more together.
They're bed partners, yeah.
And
metalheads aren't going out during the week and partying, whereas those ska kids.
Yeah, and it was, you know, you could go to it on a Saturday night and listen to lots of metal.
Yeah.
There wasn't the place for, you know, really pop punk and ska punk especially. So we switched it around, and me and Liam started DJing the main room, and we did that as, you know, ska punk and pop punk, and, you know, Mark switched over and just did, you know, metal in the back room, and something clicked, it was great. It was like a party every Tuesday night. You know, we started DJing, you know, we had fun on stage. I can remember I said I wanted the ethos to be more sort of, because we DJed from on stage, so we kind of said, look, let's make it more like a live show. And, you know, I can remember we were, you know, basically got drunk, DJed the two of us, and I ran around the stage. I mean, later on, I think we started building almost like stage sets with like risers and the famous trampoline. Literally, we got one of those little, you know, mini trampolines, the exercise ones.
Yeah, the little circular ones.
Yeah, we got one of those on stage, and like in between the risers, we used to run across the risers, bounce on the trampoline and across the stage. It was great. And yeah, Liam did it for a bit. And then, of course, Kev, who you know well from Pignut,
he was moving up to Leeds.
So it just so happened that Liam left. I think he moved to Newcastle. So, and it just happened at the time that Kev was moving to Leeds. He wanted to get out of Birmingham. It felt so empty.
Exactly, yeah. It's a mass exodus. Yeah. Everybody's bailing. Pignut are breaking up.
So he came up to Leeds. I think Pignut's kind of fizzled out soon after that. around the same time. But yeah, Kev came up to Leeds, and you know, I lived with him as well. He came and moved up to Leeds. We lived together, and he came in my DJ partner in Slamdunk, and it was great. You know,
could you feel at that time? Because I genuinely believe this. I feel that, particularly with hindsight, but maybe even in the moment, could you feel something was brewing? Like not only just a nationwide scene, but specifically you were like, I'm onto something special here. Could you feel that in the club night?
Yeah, I mean, well, ultimately it was about how many people were coming to it. This was Tuesday night, we're not just going to fight our Saturday night. Suddenly, you know, RP, we were doing, you know, we were doing sort of 500, 600 people on a Tuesday night. On a not just a rock night, you know.
Saturday nights.
Every rock club in every town had a rock night. We still do it tonight. We still do it every
pre
Saturday
and
night.
Post-COVID.
In Leeds at the Key Club, it's just a standard rock night.
Yeah, you know, all the rock bases are covered. Yeah, but this was just a specific.
Specialist, yeah, and it was as the scene was exploding. This was, you know, early 2000s. You know, ska punk. And you know, the bigger pop punk, classic pop punk that was coming through, and then of course around 2004, 2005, then the sort of the emo started kicking in.
That's when I tapped out, to be honest. that's for me, that was my university years when I was like, but that's exactly around the time when this club night becomes, well, does it become a festival first, or does it become
around that time as well, I think 2004, I left the student union and went to work for the cockpit full time.
Right.
Because I was making too much money and taking too much money home with me, like from, you know, co-promoting the club night. I think they realized it was cheaper to just
get him on full-time wage. Yeah.
So, and obviously, you give me time to do more stuff. So, you know, I went over there full-time. And then when I did that, I started promoting shows with them at the cockpit. So, and it would be Slam Dunk Presents. Yeah. So then I was doing loads of gigs through the cockpit, loads of bands coming through.
Who around that time were you booking perhaps on some of their first early UK shows?
Just trying to think. US bands, the ones that we mentioned, UK bands, your Cap Downs, like I said. Just trying to think around, you know, early 2000s, mainly those bands. I still wasn't doing bigger bands myself. Obviously, Colin, who I work with, you know, he booked, you know, did like Newfound Glory and, you know, those bands coming through at that point. But then, you know, it all started to change around that, you know, that 2005 mark when, you know, these bands, the new breed started coming through, you know, with Fall Out Boy, you know, of course, leading the charge at that point. I'll say one of my best friends to this day, Mark Newey, who's an agent, and we sort of came up professionally together. I can remember at the time, you know, it was about that 2005 point, so he phoned me up and goes, Ben, I've taken on this new band called Fall Out Boy. Can you, like,
can you still work with them to this day?
Check them out, see what you think. And I listened and so, yeah, this is great. And obviously he took those around on, he took loads of other bands on around that time as well. And
isn't it wild how at that time rock changed so quickly? You know, there'd be new genres coming through every six to 12 months.
Yeah.
You know, like ska was a thing, emo is a thing, post-hardcore is a thing. I don't feel like these waves happen as much anything like anymore. But then, certainly, I think that was the last time when it was like, there's a new scene, there's a new band, there's a new thing. It was rapid, wasn't it?
Yeah. And that was the thing with we were doing the gigs and we could do all this stuff. But it was, with the club night, it was getting harder as it went on, because when, like you say, all the different, you know, we started off saying, right, we do pop punk and ska punk. And as all these certain subgenres even of that side coming through, your emo pop punk, certain emo, like, just we were putting them in the club night was even naturally evolving with the scene. So, but then naturally we would start losing more, would lose people that came for the original stuff. Like you said yourself, you started.
I tapped out. Yeah.
Because once saw the emo and pop punk and the softer pop punk started coming through, the more pop stuff, then we would play less ska, for example.
Yeah.
So the people that were there just for the ska going, you're not playing enough ska anymore. And
it's over, man. And that's what's really hard about club nights is it's so hard, especially now, because I feel like we're in such a fractured age of taste now. Everybody just likes everything and loves nothing. But that's what's really hard about a club night is you're trying to keep a dance floor, but everybody likes different stuff.
Yeah.
And I think the beautiful thing, just to jump ahead really quickly with a festival, is you can cater to all those tastes with different stages.
Yeah.
So so you're putting on shows.
Yeah.
They're going well, obviously. Yeah. You're at the cockpit full time. When do Yumi at Six enter the equation?
A little bit after that, 2007. So the big thing.
So you launched Slam Dunk before you start working with them?
Yeah. So there's Slam Dunk. Yeah. So Slam Dunk as a club brand started in 2001, and then club Slam Dunk Presents shows, and then in 2006 that's when the first festival was
in Leeds.
Yes,
with the aforementioned Fall Out Boy headlining.
Yes,
which is wild now when you think that they're a Reading headliner. Was that one of their first, if not their first, UK like headline festival?
Yes, appearance? Yes, and it's, I mean, it's a funny story in the fact that, you know, people go, oh, so do you set out to, you know, you get the idea and think, oh, you must have set out and gone, right, I'm going to create a festival. We're going to do a Slam Dunk festival. It was completely by accident, in the, to be honest, because it was.
It was like an all day, or was it, to begin
with?
Yeah,
it was, and it was a part of the Fall Out Boy tour. So what happened was, again, so I was working with Fall Out Boy, and I did, I think they played, it was early as it was. It was the January I put them on in. It was just as from under the cork tree was breaking. So, you know, they were quickly, quickly rising. And I put them on in the January at the time, which was the biggest venue in Leeds. Put them on at the refectory. Sold that out, and then there were a friend, Mark, who their agent, he gave me a call just after that and goes, "Ben, just to let you know, they're coming back in May, but sorry, you're not going to get a show," because obviously I'm a what's called a local promoter or regional promoter. I only promote in Leeds, in my city, basically. I don't promote the whole,
and that's true
UK.
To this day, right?
yeah still only as a show promoter. I still just promote Leeds.
Do you wangle
it? Yeah, so they're coming back, but sorry, mate, you're not going to get a show because you haven't got a venue big enough in Leeds. I'm like, oh no, this is bad. I got a show, you know.
Why did you want it so bad?
Just because I felt, you know, I was part of the journey. I was part of the ride, the Fall Out Boy, you know, friends with. But, you know, I'd seen them coming up and growing and growing. It was my first sort of big act that I was really working with and going through.
I get that. So you had a sense of connection to it.
Yeah, and really wanted to do a Fall Out Boy show in May. And I was kind of thinking, what can we do? And just so happened that some partner, Colin, he had just got this outdoor venue in Leeds called Millennium Square, which was, you know, a council-owned city square. And he'd just done... He'd done a show the year before, so he put Kaiser Chiefs on in this Millennium Square. So it was a large outdoor square. It was 7,000 capacity. So, and because it was, you know, end of May, I thought, well, it's summer. It's the summer, like, because you could only do shows outdoor, obviously, in the summer, you only like to use it then. So I thought, well, could we do it? And so I rang up Mark and said, look, I know we haven't got a large, you know, we didn't have an arena in Leeds at the time. We hadn't got any kind of 5,000, you know, because they were doing Brixton Academy, they were doing like Manchester Apollo, so they were doing that, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 range. I said, look, we've got an outdoor venue, 7,000 capacity, And he said, well, you know, that's a bit too big. You know, there are only, you know, Brixton's the biggest one. That's 5,000, London.
And was that selling?
It wasn't on sale, I don't think, right, at that point.
But they were confident.
They were confident it was going to do. So traditionally, I'm sure you know, the London show is usually the biggest. London, you sell, when bands play, their London shows, the biggest. The London show will always be a, you know, slightly bigger than the rest of the country. So if they do, you know, if they do a 2,000 capacity venue in London, they tend to do 1,000 capacities the rest of the country, or they do 3,000 in London and they do, you know, 2,000 like academy size venues the rest of the country. So this was, look, you know, we can't do 7,000 in Leeds. Like, but I said, look, well, hear me out.
Don't tell Ben Ray can't. I don't want to hear can't.
Yeah. So I said, look, right. If you give me a Saturday, right, and you let me not only put Fall Out Boy in their support bands, but let me extend the bill a bit. Like, you know, we'll start it earlier in the day and we'll put a few more bands on and I'll call it a festival.
Amazing.
And it's like, what are you going to call this festival? And I said, well, we've got a brand here. We've got a brand that's known for the club night. We're doing shows. We'll call it Slam Dunk Festival. And, you know, obviously a few more conversations happened and, you know, it happened. He, you know, thankfully he convinced the band and the management to do it. You know, so I still owe him a lot to this day for that. And yeah, so we did it and we put it on sale. We booked a few more bands.
So who was on the bill? Who was on the tour with
So the bill was, it was
Cat Down were on it, but I can't imagine they
weren't on the tour. So the tour was,
let's get some Scar Boys in.
The tour was Fall Out Boy, the Academy is Remain Support, and the Hush Sounds were opening. I think there were like a new band on Fueled by Rara, and so you know, right, they tend to, that point they were taking out bands on the same label, etc. So I thought, well, I had a few more bands and, you know, I wanted to make it a bit more diverse on the, you know, the genres of music that Slam Dunk was known for. So, of course, I had to get a ska band. So, you know, Cap Down is the biggest UK ska band. They were straight on the bill. We added 100 Reasons and Thursday to give it a bit more...
emo credibility.
Yeah, emo, yeah, post-hardcore sort of thing. And then... Thank, like Hello Goodbye, which was another US sort of emo pop band, happened to be coming into the UK at the same time, so we got them on the bill. And yeah, so,
and assumedly this is by far and away the biggest thing you've put on in your life at this point.
By far.
So are you stressing out, or are you confident, or how are you feeling about it going into it and then on the day?
I can't remember being, I mean, I can remember nerves on the day and around the events, but I think, you remember putting it on sale, I think, you know, we put it on sale and it, you know, it flew out, it did really well. It was, you know, it was something struck a chord with the fans. And, you know, at that point, it was just people from Leeds. I know a few people travelled, a few people have said to me to this day, oh, you know, I'm from Birmingham, but I still went to the Leeds, like, still went to the first Slam Dunk ever. We all came to Leeds, etc.
You know what's cool about Leeds, and I'm sure that everybody who lives here will, you know, attest to this and agree with it, is it's a real alternative rock and roll city, isn't it? There's a healthy scene here, and God bless Birmingham. At the time when, you know, you were playing in Pignut and I was starting to go to shows, Birmingham had a great scene then, but it's been a long time since it's had a scene like that. And Leeds, I feel, whenever I've been here over the last 10 years, it's just, it feels like an alternative city.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, it was, I mean, it's always been, you know, it's well known for different styles of music, like the indie scene in Leeds, of course, you know, massive, like Kaiser Chiefs, you know, around that time, of course, this was the time that
this was
Kaiser
the time,
Chiefs,
the indie landfill, as
Kaiser Chiefs, Cribs,
all that kind of stuff,
like a lot of local bands, big local scene, so Leeds was a musical city. And of course, it is, you know, it is a nice city. It's known for, you know, nighttime culture, and ultimately putting it on a Saturday as well. You know, people came to Leeds for a weekend, which still happens to this day. The fact is,
well, it's a big like Stag and Hen city as well, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly that. And like people still, you know, to this day with the festival, it's like a lot of people won't go to their, you know, closest event because they like coming to Leeds.
Yeah. I've noticed that at Slam Dunk especially, actually. And is it usually the first of the...
It varies. It does vary. It is at the moment. I mean, we are looking at, we might eventually, one of the things we're considering, and it depends what else is on and what else, but, you know, it could easily switch back to Hatfield being the first and Leeds being the second. Leeds kind of works better logistically for us because, of course, we're based in Leeds.
Yeah.
The company is based in Leeds, so we can,
yeah, so rather, you know, where we set,
we kind of, you know, we, especially this year, like with the Leeds site being new, we kind of, you know, we got to work from her, you know, we could go up to the site, set it up, and then it's the first where we start.
This is an amazing detail as well, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but obviously on the days of the festival, you've got, you know, hundreds of people working for you, but round the year, Slam Dunk as a company is three people, right? It's yourself, Jasmine, and JD.
No, it's a bit more than that. It's because we are, you know, we are part of it's called the Future Sound Group. So it's still there's almost Slam Dunk's only one side of the business. It's the Future Sound is the sort of the promoter company that used to own the Cockpit, and, you know, so I was working for Future Sound, and, you know, initially I was doing a lot of, you know, I was actually promoting a lot of indie bands as well and doing other stuff on top of the Slam Dunk stuff. But eventually, because the Slam Dunk side of the business started taking off,
I
started just doing Slam Dunk, and eventually the company's kind of, you know, the company kind of split off. So Slam Dunk's its own company now, part owned by Future Sound. But Slam Dunk's a kind of separate company that, you know, just specializes in this music. Future Sound, like I say, Future Sound's the rock arm, and Slam Dunk's the rock arm, and Future Sound is the indie arm, and all the other different types of music, obviously, that they do. So it works like that. So for Slam Dunk only, they're only specializing just in Slam Dunk and only working on Slam Dunk. Yes, it's a very small operation. It's me. JD, who's been with me many years now, I think he started 2010, so he's been.
How did you two meet?
Funny story, I mean, again, it's all through this club night and DJing. So Kev, I don't know why these DJs kept on leaving me. I don't know why, but Kev, it finally came time. Kev decided to up and leave from Leeds and move down to London, and.
The bright lights of London were calling.
Yeah, so when he did that, it was funny. I remember him coming to me and going, "So, man, as you know, I'm moving to London, and I've been thinking, and good news, I found someone to replace me, DJ." And I was like, "Oh, is that like this? Someone bringing someone in that I didn't know, because obviously it's not just about the music thing. It was about the, you know, the personal side, you know."
Having that, you want to hang out and enjoy their company.
Yeah, friends, you know, having that chemistry on stage and working together fine. And he goes, right, so, you know, I've got this kid, like this kid, he's really good. I think he was DJing some other little stuff, and he was just one of the regulars at the night, and they became friends with Kev, and he goes, yeah, so this guy, JD. I met him properly, and, you know, we gave him a go, and he was great, you know, amazing DJ, and, you know, we got on well, and it fitted, and he was just perfect for it. So Kev left. So JD started DJing, and, you know, and he got to that point where after a few years just DJing, it was like, you know, right, yeah, come and work full time. So, you know, that's why he's been there for so long.
He's your right-hand man, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly that. So... he's great. Couldn't have done it all without him. He does everything with me. He's now, you know, he's the main sort of the promoter. He runs the, you know, all the shows in Leeds all year round.
He looked after us on the Dirty Sanchez show we did, and we had a good night out after that.
Yeah, so.
What I love about you guys as well is when you do the Slam Dunk festivals, you travel between the sites, like all the Slam Dunk crew on a tour bus.
Yep.
And I love that because it's just another thing that you guys do that's very family friendly, well, not family friendly, but very family orientated and just about the friendship and the community and having fun. Like, you work your ass off, but you want to have fun and kick it with each other when the job's done.
Yeah, it kind of started because, you know, I always say they get key to Slumdog success is the slow build of it. You know, we talked about, you know, the first one in 2006, you know, it was, you know, that was a success. It sold out, you know, 7,000 people, but it was one stage and kind of...
It did sell out, did it?
Boom. Yeah. It sold out. And then obviously taking it to the, you know, the next year, I mean, it was only going to be a one-off, but then it was like, oh, we've got something now. We want to do it again.
When did you decide we've got to do one again? When was that moment?
Well, it's pretty soon afterwards anyway.
On the day.
But I always said, you know, it was a bit of a fluke. No, we weren't going to get a chance of getting a headliner as big as Fallout Boy. I knew it was going to happen. So we looked at, you know, so I thought, right, you need to do a smaller venue. So of course went to Leeds Refectory. So in 2007 we did a one stage in the Refectory, which was Real Big Fish headlining.
Mate, that year, right, I've got the lineup here in front of me. That year is just all of my friends and homies. Like, yeah. I wish Beat Union, AIDS Bands, I'm gonna see AIDS tomorrow, he's turning 40 tomorrow. Sonic Boom 6, my dear friends, Real Big Fish, as you said, Mad Caddies. And then, are they a little-known band? Are they an upcoming band? Paramore. What's the deal with them in 2007?
So they were just breaking, and they played second from top. So they actually played underneath the Real Big Fish because they were kind of breaking, and they were started selling tickets, but they hadn't.
They weren't ahead.
You know, they weren't. They were probably, I think, when they played, I think, you know, they were getting probably worth about the same amount of tickets as Real Big Fish, but they, you know, they were the, you know, special guests underneath Real Big Fish, and they, you know, just seemed to break in.
Just again, it's the right band at the right time, isn't it? Talk about, you know, the 1-2 of Fall Out Boy and then them at that time.
Mm, yeah, so
incredible.
Yeah,
and then you've also got opening the stage, right? Is this right? Yeah. The first band on the bill.
Yeah, first band on the bill.
Now, do they get on the bill because you're working with them at this point, or do you start working with them?
Well,
after?
Both at the same time, I think. Funnily enough, a few months before that, I kind of, so the company as a whole had started managing bands. So Colin and partner, he'd started managing the Pigeon Detectives, obviously, an indie band.
Found out. She's going.
So he was doing that. So of course, you know, anything he did on the indie side, I was going, oh, I want to, you know. So I kind of like, I was like, oh, I fancy managing a band. And I can remember it was at the time, it was like, you know, so I'd say the lead scene wasn't, well, there wasn't like, there was, you know, there's loads of bands, but there wasn't, you know, I hadn't connected with any kind of local Leeds bands, like, oh, they're amazing, I want to manage them.
Thought, and you'd been at it 5 years or so at this point.
There's, you know, like I said, there's some good Leeds bands, but, you know, I wanted to find, you know, I wanted to be sure and find better. So I, funny enough, I looked, it was at the time where it was, you know, MySpace was massive, and MySpace had this amazing feature, which I wish was still around today, is
or a Facebook equivalent,
which is top artists.
Yeah.
So it let you go on and put these filters on, and would give you the top artists. So I just put on the filter, pop punk, emo, or whatever I did at the time, and put UK. So it literally gave you the top 10 bands of the genre. But not only that, you could then click on unsigned. So you could quickly see, and of course, went on there, number one or number two, I think, at the time, band called Union Six. I'm sorry, and I started, well, I can remember listening to the top few bands. I can't remember who the others were. Union Six, I just kept on listening to their track over and over again, and going, this is amazing, this is amazing. And I think at the same time, it's just so coincidental that I had a show at the Cockpit that sold out that didn't have a support. I think it was Sayersin or something like that. They didn't have a tour support, and they said, just put someone on. Now, usually, if if a band said put on a local support, a touring band says a local support, it's because they want a local band that's going to bring a bit of a local crowd.
Because ticket sales aren't so good. Yeah.
So you see that a lot. And fair play, like the first small touring bands, of course, you know, they're on their first tour, you know, American bands, whatever, they come around, of course, they're going to ask for local bands to bring.
Do you think that's still the case? Do you think local support still bring in local sales in that same way?
Not as many as they did, which is so back in the day, you know, you used to.
It was almost like a guarantee, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, like you used to give a band, like a local band, like, oh, here's a book of 50 tickets.
Yeah,
go and sell them. And they used to go around and sell them.
And they would. They'd be like, you got any more?
Yeah. But it's sadly, it's not the case anymore. And I'm not sure why that is. You know, these bands got better. I don't know what the case is now, but, you know, they're still bringing people, but not to these. I don't know whether there's more bands or
I don't think there's scenes anymore. I think there's bands,
yeah,
and there's people that are playing music and there's people that are going to the shows, but I just don't really feel like there's those same regional scenes.
Yeah, I think you're right.
For whatever reason.
And also, like, the genre, like, nowadays I think genres are more widespread, where back in those days it was, you know, very small. Pop punk scene,
yeah,
metal scene, and there was, and every, if you were into that music, you only listened to that music.
Yeah, it's kind of segregated and clicky, wasn't it?
Yeah. So now there's people have got so much choice, and, you know, sadly people aren't going out to shows as much to check out music because, of course, they can look on the internet. And yeah, if you wanted to find out and find some new bands, you had to go to these small shows,
yeah,
and check out some local bands. But why? I don't know whether people feel now they don't need to go and check out local bands because they can check out a world of bands at one click of their,
yeah,
I was going to say mouse, but it's going to be a past that now, isn't it? I'm going to add touch on there. One touch on their screen. So
you were pretty enamored with them from
yeah,
the get-go,
yeah.
Really?
So, yeah. So I had this opportunity to put a band on, and it didn't matter if they sold any tickets. So, you know, maybe I was doing a bit of a dirty to the local scene of Leeds on that one, rather than picking a local band.
Yeah, where
band.
Are they from? Like Buckingham or
no,
something?
No, they're from Surrey, Weybridge and Surrey. So, but I got in touch with them and said, yeah, I like your music. I got talking to them, and I said, do you want to come up to Leeds to play a show? And they went, yeah, of course. They came up to Leeds. They weren't very good, and I'm sure they'll fully admit to that. But there was something there. You could tell. You could just tell with that band just on.
Was it Josh's handsome looks?
Probably part of it. How they looked, how they acted, how they, you know, got on with other bands, and just how they're just. You know, they were young kids, but they were somehow professional, and, well, I'll say that in a very loose sense. They were hungry. They wanted it. You could tell they had the skill. Like, you know, they weren't great live, but you could tell that was something that they was early days they would get better at. And you could just tell straight off. And, of course, so I did that. So we did that, and, you know, I remember going to Colin saying, right, found a band to manage. I'm going to manage this band. And I did. I started managing them. And then just happens, obviously, Slam Dunk came around and I said, right, you're going to open up Slam Dunk Festival. They came and did that. From that, they got to know Paramore. They got on some Paramore shows.
Right,
and then
that's a perfect
We started building a band from that. They started getting on to supports, off supports, and, you know.
And then they fired you.
It wasn't as quick and as brutal as that, but we the live side was coming on well, because I was a live promoter. I just specialized in the live side, getting on tours, and the live side was going okay. Then it came to the recording side, and, you know, we did talk to a few independent labels, etc., and we talked about it. But then, of course, we had, like, again, just copying the indie side of it, Colin had the label Dance to the Radio in Leeds, which are like independent indie labels, they call it, they managed the Indie Detectives, and they also put the stuff out on this label.
Isn't that counter productive to be on the same label as your management?
From the band's point of view. I don't know. It was never a long term thing. It was very much, let's put, we need to get that's enough songs to record an album. You know, no one was throwing money at the band. It was, you know, someone did sort of kind of put an offer on the table, but it wasn't great. So it's like, look, we've got the infrastructure here to do it ourselves. Like, we've done it with Pigeon Detectives. Funnily enough, we've got a brand. Yeah. So it was Slam Dunk Records effectively was Dance the Radio, but just rebranded as Slam Dunk Records. So of course we said, right, let's put the album out ourselves. I'll call it Slam Dunk Records, and yeah, it happens. We put the album out. We put out Take Off Your Colors, did great, and yeah, there, you know, and it was going okay. Then soon after that, it was hard doing both management and label. We were struggling, and of course the band were very hungry and ambitious, and
you're promoting as well.
Yeah,
because you've obviously got to keep, you know, your income coming in.
Yeah. So I wasn't doing it full time, of course. We weren't, you know, so fair enough. They looked at a much bigger management company which had large artists on who they wanted to be. So, you know, quite rightly, they got tempted away and that they moved.
Have they played Slam Dunk since?
Yes,
they have.
Yes.
So there's no ill feelings there.
No. I think we've had, you know, fair enough. And, you know, after that happening, admittedly, you know.
Well, nothing ends well, does it?
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it did get me down. It was, you know, it was a massive blow to me personally. As I remember being very down afterwards, like, you know, what have I done and all this? And, you know, didn't understand and, you know, and felt, you know, how am I going to recover from this? They stayed on Slam Dunk Records for a while for a couple of singles, but then they moved. They moved to Virgin Records, and we sold the first album to Virgin,
right,
as well. So they moved totally off us, including the first release.
So that must have been a nice little payday for you.
No, it wasn't really, because the album was already out. It was minimal. Yes, I won't deny I did receive something for it. So
what year did they leave?
That was back in 2008.
Right.
Because they played Slam Dunk Festival 2008 had happened, but just after that they played again. You know, they're much higher up the bill that time. And that was also the year that we went multi-stage.
I love it. Every year there's always... I mean, I've looked through the history of the festival, right? And every year there's something new. Yeah. There's an extra festival. Yeah. There's an extra city. There's shows before the festival.
And
I love that about you. Can I just ask you quickly, Ben, what do you think it is? Because we all want to make money, right? So I've got no doubt that there's a cash incentive there to some extent, but I know you're not in it for that. So what do you think it is that drives you? Because you're this very driven, ambitious person. Have you always been that way? Or do you just like doing cool shit?
I'm very focused on the festival. That is the thing. I'm perhaps too focused. I mean, and that, I suppose, links with the Umeå 6 thing. And I would say, we don't know that I can't thank them enough for firing me, for managing them. Because if they hadn't done that, Slam Dunk Festival wouldn't be either around as it is, or certainly wouldn't be anywhere near what it was, because after that I focused on the festival, and to this day my main focus year round is that festival.
Yeah.
And I try to, and if I'd managed them, I wouldn't have been able to do that, because
Cheers so now, to Umeå 6.
Yeah. So
it was a little bit of it, like you felt a sense of failure in that role with them, so you wanted to plug that, you know, energy and drive into the festival to make a success of that.
Of course. I did, you know, after a bit of time being down, it did give me extra drive to make sure that was a success. You know, we'd already, you know, that year, 2008, was an important year. We kept it at the university, but then that was the multi-stage format, as it kind of has evolved into, was the first year of that, because it just so happened that Leeds University as a venue just lent itself to that. It's University Union is a, as it's a student union complex almost with a number of different venues in the building.
It's like a maze.
Yeah. So I can remember I started booking in 2008 and immediately I had too many bands. I was like, why don't I add a second stage? Then I think that was your four stages, that first one, because I didn't know when to stop, but it went
great. So you went from one to four. Yep. One in 2006, yeah, one in 2007, yeah. Four 2008. Yeah, amazing. Yeah. And that's Zebrahead's first appearance.
Yeah, yeah.
The Slam Dunk House Band.
Yeah, I can remember them playing that. But yeah, it was a multi-stage format, which, and then after that, it was, you know, then there was no stopping me. Each year, I'd add another stage. I think we got up to eight very quickly. And then just trying to grow it at the university. We, over the next few years, put venues, stages outside, taking outside, fencing outside. And then, of course...
Is it 2010 you go double size?
Yeah, that was so 8 and 9. It was grown at Leeds University. Then 2010, I kind of thought, I need to, you know, this is just in Leeds. We've got this thing, it's just in Leeds. We need to make it more accessible for everybody around the country. So, of course, we need to do a southern one. You know, of course, you know, we've seen...
It's all organic and you're not reaching too far ahead, are you, and shooting for the stars and, you know, risking failing or falling short of the bar. It's just like it's a natural, slow, steady, organic growth. The demand's continuing to grow.
Yeah.
That must be quite an exciting wave to ride.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was good. Yes, it was good. It was great. The, like I say, everything was... The scene was growing and just, yeah, like it was a wave that we rode. And
continue to. And then you go to three. What year do you go to three sites?
So 2013, so 10, 11 and 12, we just did the two sites. And I think 13, we went up to three. So we did south, obviously, for that. So, of course... somewhere in between, let's do Slam Dunk Midlands, and of course that was a, you know, personal one for me personally because I'm from Midlands, from Birmingham.
Bring,
so I thought I
home.
Wanted to take it home.
Yeah, man.
Actually, I need to go to the toilet. What do we do? Do we
do
stop the tape?
Yeah, we'll keep rolling, mate.
Keep rolling.
Yeah, we'll
just don't unplug it.
Would you grab a couple more Ronas out the fridge as well?
Yeah. What do you do?
Yeah, I'll just let the audience know. So I met Ben around this, so I kind of reconnected with him around this time. I was working on Kerrang Radio, and he came into the studios, I think it was 2011. He came in for a meeting to partner up. So Kerrang Magazine and Radio were going to become like official partners. Maybe he can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but we sat down in the studios, we had a chat, and I don't think... Although I'd spent time with Johnny and Kev from Pignut, I don't think I'd properly spent like one-on-one time with Ben. But there was that connection there and that link there, and I knew him from Pignut, and so we had just a rapport and a shared history and a shared interest in the same sort of music from that. And you know, I think Kerrang did 2 or 3 years maybe working with the festival. Then I left Kerrang, and then. At the time, I was doing the lockup stage at Reading Festival. So I was hosting a lockup stage, which is a very similar kind of a vibe to Slam Dunk, punk, pop punk. And I remember I'd always have chats with Ben. He'd be like, so who are you booking? Who are you booking? And I'd say, you know, obviously I can't tell you. And then I think Ben, maybe you can correct me when he comes back in, 2015 was the year I started. Was 2015 the year I started hosting the stage? you locked out your own kitchen. It was 2015 the year I started hosting your like punk and ska stage. Let's have a look at the bills here. No, 2015. Real Big Fish, Goldfinger, Big D and the Kids Table, Zebrahead, Lightyear, Mariachi El Bronx. So that was the year I came on board.
Yeah. Yeah, so was that the first year when we did it in Leeds City Centre?
Yep.
Yeah, so...
And then NEC was 2016?
Yes. Yeah.
In Birmingham. Ben's just refilling the beers. And every year there was something new.
Yeah.
There was like a new, I don't know, ambition, it seemed like.
Yeah.
He's even cutting limes, ladies and gentlemen. This has become like a cook show now. So I'm looking at a poster on your wall as well, and I'll never forget this. 2017. Well, in fact, no, 2016 was when you started doing the old school band. So you put on the beat,
yes,
as a one-off, and I remember you telling me, and I was like, "That's a fucking great idea."
That was 18, wasn't it? That was the year after.
No, yeah. 16 was just the beat when it was on their own. Because I remember introducing them, and Rankin Roger was like, "Man,
that was at the festival.
They were on the Desperado stage, yeah." And you were like, "Bit of a wild card this year, but I put the beat on," and I was like, "No, it's going to work." And sure enough, it did. And then the next year, you got on the Specials and Toots,
the day before,
because you figured you've got sights in every city, the stages are there.
Yep. Yeah,
that let's was throw something for the older generations before the kids come in and have their fun.
Yeah, exactly that. I'd previously promoted the Specials. I put the Specials on at, I actually did the same thing I did, but it was just the Specials on the site. I think in 2009 or something, when it was still at, when the festival was still up at the uni, and I put the Specials on down in Millennium Square.
Right.
I did that. That was on their, because it was on their comeback tour, basically, on their anniversary tour. So, as a promoter, that was massive for me. Like,
well, that's the source. Those two acts there, Toots and the Specials.
Yeah.
That is the source of ska.
Yeah.
From which it all comes.
Yeah. I got, it was a massive thing for me because I got to promote the Specials, such a big band for us all, on their comeback tour. So I'd worked with them before. And that year, I can remember it was, we had the site. So I thought, well, let's try and get, a band on the three sites the day before, kind of. And also, again, it was trying to make a kind of package out of it, not just the Specials. I'd go, I need a big special guest. And I'd worked with Toots before, doing small shows in Leeds.
R.I.P. Toots.
Yes, yeah. So, very sad recently with him dying because I worked with him for quite a few years. Such a nice bloke. And, I was hoping to work again with him in the future. So, but, I'm very, because of that.
And Roger as well from the Beats, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horrible and it's really sad, but it makes you appreciate what you do, I think, even more. When you start to lose people like that and you think like, wow, I got to promote that band that's, that's an iconic band and I got to get to know this person.
But also, as fans of the music, it's, not being able to see that band again. Of course, we all experienced it. Everyone thinks, we would have loved to have seen Nirvana or the Beatles or Doors or all these classic artists that we all would have loved to have seen. But, when it's someone that you've actually seen and you kind of taken it for granted that you can see this artist, and then suddenly you can't see him anymore. So my favorite band in the world has always been the Beastie Boys.
Really?
So very
I never got to see them in the scene that I
specialize in, that I like most artists in, but I got into the Beastie Boys, when I was younger, around 1990 or something. And, they've been my favourite band ever since, with the thing. And luckily I got to see them, albeit very late.
Which tour did you see them on? Hello Nasty?
No, I don't, not that tour, which regret so much. I didn't go and see them. I saw them on the net. On the Five Boroughs tour, and I also saw them at South by Southwest in Texas. I got to see them twice. But, when MCA died, it was, it was massive. I mean, because they were my favorite shows ever, seeing my favorite band and everything. And, I was going to see them every time, soon after that, I was going to go and see them. And then he died, and just that realization that, because especially because it's such a, with the Beastie Boys being three of them, you know, you can't replace.
No way. And they wouldn't even attempt it, would
yeah,
they?
Yeah, so with them, it was, you know, and, you know, just the realisation you're never going to see that band again. And, you know, and the same thing happened there. We Toots, obviously, you know, that. And then, you know, and we've all seen it, you know, members of bands dying. And, you know, I've got friends that were, you know, massive Bowie fans, you know, when he died.
Prince,
you know, Prince. I mean, there's a lot of artists that.
Motorhead being a big one. Yeah. I mean, we're sadly in that time now because it's a generational thing, isn't it? And we don't want to sidetrack too much onto that, but it's certainly notable now that, you know, COVID aside, if you can get out there and see a band that you love, if they're out there doing it, do it whilst you can.
Yeah, definitely.
Do it whilst you can. And that goes for young bands as well. If you love an upcoming band, don't miss out on one of their tours because you're busy or whatever that night, because that band might not be a band on the next
cycle. I think, touching on the old Corona subject, it's...
And Brexit, let's throw that in the mix as well.
Yeah, but I think, as an industry, you know, we're crippled at the moment and really down on our knees. But, like, I think that we do have the belief that when live shows come back, that shows we will see, you know, a new life to shows. Because I think people, like you say, people will realise that, you know, especially in the short term when it comes back, everybody's going to be going out to shows, as many as they can. You know,
2022
all the time,
is
you know,
going to be a great year for live
show,
music.
Shows going to go, but we're hoping that will stay. Yeah, like people, like, you know,
keep your phones
in
your pocket.
You don't realize. You know, they say, you know, you don't realize that you got until it's gone. You know,
Joni Mitchell never lies. And we've all realised that now this year, haven't we? We've all realised this year what we had and we took for granted. Okay. And now it's gone and we want it back, and it will be back soon.
Yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
2017 for me is a key year for the evolution of Slam Dunk. Yeah. You introduced Toots and the Specials each day before, but also that Fireball stage that year, man, that poster for me is still one of my favourite and greatest things. There it is up there. Bowling for Soup, Less Than Jake, Real Big Fish, Goldfinger, Mad Caddy, Zebrahead, Ataris, Phoenix TX, MC Lars, Matt Stocks. Now, to put that on, I remember having a conversation with you that year and being like, dude, how are you going to follow this? Because it was so perfect and so big. And as a DJ, right, go with me on this analogy. As a DJ, I always say all you can do is that the song that you're about to play needs to be better than the one you're playing now. Now, better can sometimes just be an interesting choice and therefore different. Sometimes you can't actually improve. You have to just sidestep. But it's always, what can I do that's going to excite, in my case, the listener, in your case, the audience? And that's what I love about what you do, is every year, you know, you never rest on your laurels. You never take your foot off the gas. It's always, this is the next step in the ongoing evolution of this thing, because I need to improve upon and take this further every year. You're never just content with where you're at.
I
love that.
I mean, like, so, I mean, the evolution, as you said before, it's, you know, I always strive to grow every year. So in the early days, it was adding another stage, adding, making the capacities bigger, then increasing the number of sites, you know, going to South, going to Midlands, and then, you know, and then at each of those three places, once we got up to the limit of what the venue could take, you know, move it. So obviously we were at Wolverhampton.
Yep.
You know, we moved from Wolverhampton to Midlands, from Wolverhampton to Birmingham to go to the bigger venue in Hatfield. We've moved from the university to Hatfield Park to go outdoors in Leeds. We've moved twice. We moved from the university to the city centre and now to Temple Newsom, an outdoor park. So we keep on stretching, making it bigger, always changing it, you know, which people that work in it, they don't, oh, Ben, why are you doing this again? Why can't you just settle?
This seems like a good place to ask this question, if this is okay. What happened to Birmingham?
Oh, no, well, of course.
Let's get into it.
That was always going to happen, wasn't it, that question? Yes.
It comes up every year, doesn't it?
Yeah.
On the social media posts, you see it. And obviously, you know, as somebody who comes from Birmingham and the pride which you felt with bringing the festival to that city, it's not something you're going to discard lightheartedly without second and third thinking the thing over.
Yeah.
So how come you had to let it go?
Yeah, it's quite funny. I made the joke that I'm no longer welcome home in my home city. After I go in disguise then every time I go out in Birmingham. No.
Traitor.
Yeah. So obviously people are, you know, took it very badly. You know, I think Slam Dunk has got something against Birmingham, which many people don't know. I'm from Birmingham, which may shock them. I mean, ultimately, you know, I think a lot of people kind of get it in the fact that it was when we made the sites bigger. So we've, you know, this, because we were a specialist type of music, there's only a certain amount of people in the UK as a whole that are into this music or into this music and willing to go to a festival or want to go to a festival. So ultimately, you know, it's, you know, there was three smaller venues, and now obviously we've condensed it into two. You know, the costs of putting three on were too much.
Because you're booking bigger bands as well.
Yeah, the artist spend's obviously gone up, and everything's gone up. You know, all the production spend, and you know what it takes to put on the shows, and ultimately, we moved Hatfield to outdoors, and then we moved Leeds to outdoors, and these are two massive sites that we basically the capacity of the number of people that went to Birmingham can easily fit into the other two.
Yeah.
You know, the last Birmingham one, we didn't sell out. You know, this is the point. It's like, you know, and the NEC, I'm sure people can be aware, it was a very expensive venue to do the event at. You know, and it just didn't stack up financially. I know people, you know, they don't understand and feel like, you know, yeah. You know, we experience what a lot of bands experience. You've seen when any tour gets announced.
Here's our UK tour.
Yeah, here's our UK
three or four
tour.
Dates, yeah.
And people go crazy that band isn't playing.
What about Sheffield?
Yeah. And it's you know, ultimately, it's people expect events to be on their doorstep so they don't have to travel.
Well, this is what I find hilarious, dude, is in America.
Okay. Yeah, people, I know. I was going
to
use exactly the same example.
3 hours to go to a show, no complaints. Yeah. In the UK, they'll live in Birmingham and they'll go, well, I'm not going to Wolverhampton.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think I'm going to Wolverhampton?
Well,
that's
when we moved from Wolverhampton.
That's a 20-minute train ride.
When we moved from Wolverhampton to Birmingham.
Yeah.
People of Wolverhampton up in arms, yeah. And they had to travel to
Birmingham.
It was Birmingham. Like, oh, my God. So, yeah.
Also, as well, I'll say this. This isn't Ben, but I'll say this. Respectfully, every tour I've done, Birmingham is always the least sold. There is just something about Birmingham now. It wasn't always the case. Growing up, it was different. But now Birmingham just doesn't seem to be a very thriving I don't know, pocket of the UK touring scene.
Yeah,
it just
do hear
doesn't.
That. Obviously, as a promoter that only does Leeds, I'm often told that Birmingham isn't as strong for...
The sales are never as good.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
No.
It's strange.
Yeah.
I guess maybe because the scene on a ground level isn't as thriving. Because, you know, it breeds and feeds into it, doesn't it?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Will it come back, Ben, ever?
Who knows?
Who knows with you?
Yeah.
What you're planning next?
So, I mean, I'll be honest, like, what the venues that we're at now, we it feels like we've found a permanent home, finally.
So you're going to stop getting greedier and growing?
Yeah, I mean, we've, you know, so 2020, that's obviously just been cancelled. It was the first year where I say to people, it was easy. As in, we weren't hardly doing anything different. We had added another stage, I think, or we changed the format of the stages. But, you know, we were in the same locations. We were, you know, it was the first year where, because every year we had to rewrite the rule book. We had to rewrite all the documentation of how JD used to hate it. Oh, my God, I've got to write all those.
Why don't you tell the story real quick, if you can tell it quickly, the amazing story that you told me when the man... You know, amazing might be the wrong word with the context of this, but the Manchester attack happened, and because of that, and because of the closing in of, you know, the red tape of the health and safety, you had to work very closely with the police, right? And it was actually them that gave you the recommendation to get the Hatfield site that you wanted. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they'd seen how well behaved the Slam Dunk fans were, and how easy it ran. And why didn't you condense that story? Because I think it's a great insight.
Yeah. So we were at Hatfield House at the time. We wanted to go to a bigger site. We wanted to keep it in Hatfield. We liked Hatfield. Hatfield were very supportive. The university was very supportive, and we wanted to move to the outdoor site, Hatfield Park or Hatfield House, well, Hatfield Park at Hatfield House. So we wanted to get to this site, and they'd run events previously. So we went to speak to them and they said, no music festivals. I said, please, can we run? You've had a music festival, no music festivals. And so I did a bit of digging. It turns out that their last music festival was a dance festival.
Yeah. Some crazy rave with laughing gas.
It was the gas that was the thing. So they had various problems with, you know, antisocial behaviour, like loads of drugs problems with the police, loads of
vandalism,
with the local residents, and everybody just said no more music festivals. And I started out to try to convince them that rock fans aren't the same as dance fans, but originally they didn't see this. And I was trying to convince them, look, please come down to the event and see the thing, you know, rock fans and, you know, people of this genre, they have to, you know, they should pat themselves on the back that rock fans in general are very good, and they are known for not causing trouble and being nice fans.
Well behaved.
And well behaved, and, you know, and
ironically.
Yeah, and ultimately so. Yeah, I think it was, as you say, the Manchester attacks were unfortunately, like, you know, a terrible thing that happened that, and they had just happened to happen just before Slam Dunk Festival. You know, and we were like, that week was, you know, unbelievable.
Must
week
have been
before,
hell.
Yeah, so, you know, processing everything that happened. Obviously, we were all in fear that, you know, if it could happen there, could it happen to a tower festival? And then, you know, Ian and sort of reassuring.
Do we go ahead with it? Yeah,
to speak, you know, consultation with the police, local authorities. You know, it was an absolute nightmare. And obviously, of course, it went ahead, but with very thorough, you know, with increased security and increased... security, and of course a police presence.
Yeah.
And of course the police came down to Hatfield, and ultimately they saw, you know, the police were massed at Hatfield, and they actually saw, you know, they saw the festival and how nice everyone was, and there was no problems. There was none of the, you know, the problems that I had at the dance festival. And yeah, ultimately, they, you know, they got behind us and came, you know, said to Hatfield House, this isn't that dance festival, give them a go. And they did, and, you know, we got that site, and we're still there now. We work great with Field House, The council down there were so supportive. They're great. The police are supportive. You know, the local residents are great. We meet with the local residents, make sure they're happy and they're lovely. And yeah, that's you know, home. We want to stay in Hatfield for as long as possible. Leeds, as I said, we've made a home there, and you know, we'll probably be at those two sites for a long time to come.
Amazing. So we've learned from this conversation that we have Yumi at six and the police to thank for the longevity and security of Slam Dunk. Now, right. Ben, as we approach the end, the final topic I'd love to get into, you know, with you is, you must have over the years had a few bands that come up time and time again that people go, why haven't you booked so-and-so? Why has this person never played? What about, are there a few recurring ones that you'd like to discuss here?
Of course, and I was kind of, well...
And perhaps why you haven't?
Yeah, I mean, a bit of insight into the booking of it in general. So the first thing you've mentioned before is the, you know, that particular, you focus on one particular stage, the Scar stage. So one thing with Sandrick is like, I like to try to make sure if someone goes there and they're into a particular subgenre, there is enough for them.
Well, so, dude, now you pretty much have. If you like post-hardcore, then you can just stay at one stage all
ultimately.
Day. That's kind of now where it's at.
Yeah, and I don't like to mix it up. You know, like a festival that goes, oh, yeah, we'll get moving around and everybody moving in between stages. It's like if someone wants to stay at a particular music, they can stay at one stage, and we need to make sure that stage is good enough for them to stay there all day. There's enough of Tursa. You know, we'd never book, you know, we'd never get to a point where we would just have one ska band on the bill. Just we would make sure there's a, you know, a full bill.
There's
of
five
Sir
or
no.
Yeah.
So we always make sure there is enough, like, to balance the genres. And I mean, the main thing that, of course we get that, people saying, why hasn't this band played and et cetera. I mean,
Blink-182. I bet you get them a lot, right?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, you know, the bigger bands are, you know, I'll be honest, they are too big to play the festival. When
Green
they come
Day,
over,
Blink-182.
Exactly.
Too big. Paramore now, Fall Out Boy now.
If they come over and they can do a big arena tour, ultimately they will come over and do a big arena tour. They're not going to do Slam Dunk instead of coming over and doing an arena tour. And ultimately, you know, any on smaller, like, you know,
Weezer too big.
I don't think Weezer totally fits in the genre of Slam Dunk. I mean, I'm sure people would argue with me.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, because like Jimmy Eat World are very, very similar, but I think it's a slight generational thing, isn't it? Weezer are.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean,
But then No Effects and Punk and Joplin.
I mean, that's the thing.
It's a minefield, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's been hard over the years, like, kind of making that call on, you know, what, trying to keep.
Do you have the yes and the no list? Slam Dunk friendly or not?
No, well, just whether we think they fit in the genre, you know, admittedly, there are some choices that we make on that. But also, you know, ultimately, there is a lot of people that go, why haven't you got this band? I don't think people realise that. We do ask these bands, and I think people think that if we ask them to play, they will play.
So go on then, who's turned it down?
I'm certainly not going to list that. But there's a number of bands that we have asked multiple times. So a lot of these bands are people, why don't you get this band to play? We've asked them. They've said no. It's like, we can't do anything about it. You know,
Will you keep asking? Is there a point where Ben Ray ever gives up?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's certain bands that, you know, we've, you know, I'm not one of these person that, you know, will take it personally and go, you know, and just go, well, I've asked you once or 10 times, you remember? Like, I'm never asking you again. This is the last time.
Have you asked The Offspring?
I'm not going to comment on individual bands.
Great answer.
I will say this. Offspring are open to playing the fest.
There we go.
I'm sure they wouldn't be upset with me saying that. They would like to play the festival at some point. The timing hasn't been right. That's the other thing. I mean, I could probably go on for another hour about the ins and outs, and without, you know, overstepping the mark and saying too much that I shouldn't say, there are certain, you know, facts that some people have guessed, obviously, about
exclusivity
and timing. Ultimately, you know, people say, why can't you play this band? Why can't this band play? Well, they were over in UK earlier in the year, or they're coming in later. I mean, I can't understand sometimes. I go, can this band play? Oh, and you know, the band say, oh, they're not over in the UK at the end of May. They're coming in at the end of August. And I'll still, well, can't they come in May?
Yeah.
And it's like, there's so much of a bigger picture that, you know, even I, you know, new to some stuff, and the fact of how, you know, you've got to look how it's not, UK is a small island at the end of the day, and you've got to look at these international
Brexit's
bands.
Brexit's going to change a lot as well, isn't it?
I don't know how much on how much it'll affect.
You don't think a lot of international bands might just skip the UK altogether?
I don't know. I think the bands will still come to the UK. It's obviously going to be bad, very bad for the industry. So it's mainly it's going to affect UK bands wanting to tour Europe. Right. That's the main thing. And the other thing,
but
the industry,
you do think that American bands, European, well, yeah, American
I think
bands,
yeah, US bands, they'll always come to the UK. It's too much of a good market not to.
Thank God.
So they, yeah, so they, you know, they, it's all about your. So when they come over in the summer, they want to do a run of European festivals. So, and you got to look at the festivals that are around Slam Dunk and the ones that come over. And, you know, bands will say, well, we're not coming over in May because we're coming in August. I was like, can't you come? And they go, well, no, it's not just about UK. It's about these other European festivals. Like you say, exclusivity. I think people know now that bands will only play one festival.
The only bands,
so if bands are playing Download, they're not going to play Slam Dunk and vice versa. And that's not because we've said we won't, but they just don't want to. They're not going to come or can't afford various reasons. They're not going to come to the UK more than once in a
Skindred, Ben, seemed to me to be the only band that gets to play Download and Reading and all of them. And that they didn't they play Slam Dunk early on beneath Capdown? So it was them, then Capdown.
Yes, they did.
Imagine Capdown playing above Skindred now.
Yeah,
that's
it was obviously just when Skindred was starting or just as they were breaking or something like that. It was 2009 or something. So it's a long time ago. Yeah, so.
So I want to ask you this. As a dream booking, who are we talking?
You must. I mean, this is the thing. Everybody asks
me
that.
You've got no effects with their own stage. Yes, that's probably one of them already.
I will
right?
be honest with it. So everybody thinks it'll be someone, you know, the big ones, which of course it is. I'd love to have Blink play, of course. Good Blink, Green Day, you know, Powerball back. You know, I'd love to have Fall Out Boy back, Panic at the Disco. You know, all the, you know, ultimately.
Fall Out Boy for the 20th anniversary. It's got to be 2026. That's the goal.
I will ask them. I'll tell you that. I'll certainly ask them. So
go on then.
My favorite band that hasn't played yet that I want to is Rancid.
Oh mate, well we've spoken about this many
times.
Yeah,
so it's of course, you know. So no, you know, I'm a big, you know, punk fan, and obviously the two main ones obviously have been fans of them and wanting them to play the festival was NOFX and Rancid. Obviously, I hadn't had NOFX play till, you know, 2019, and you know I worked on getting them, and they came. Not only did they come, they brought their whole sort of stage with them, so that was amazing. And I mean, I know, like, you know, working with Fat Mike has been amazing. Nicest guy ever.
He's a great guy.
Yeah,
I don't care what anyone says about Mike. I think he's a great dude.
Yeah, he's
I first
great.
Met
he's,
him with you, and yeah. I've had several conversations with him since then. Yeah. And just a beautiful guy, very misunderstood. Mm-hmm. You know, he's out there. He lives a loud life.
Yeah,
but what a guy! Sadly, I don't want to live in a world without Fat Mike.
Yes, exactly. So he's great, and you know, and that's the thing. I'd love to have NOFX play every year now, but I'm sure there will be various things though.
I know someone who might have something to say about that. But yeah, Rancid, dude. I mean, if you get them, please let me host and DJ that stage. Can we drink to that?
Yes.
Is there anything else you want to mention or bring up?
No, that's good. I think we touched on everything about the history.
My notes have been covered.
Like I say, it's, like I say, I'm, you know, last thing on booking, it's not actually me that books the festival. It's the public. It's... You know, I'll be honest, like, we are booking a festival to get the maximum number of people there. And to do that, people vote for the bands to play, and they do that by going to shows the rest of the year. So being a promoter, you know, I put these bands on the rest of the year. I speak to other promoters from around the country. We ultimately, I look at the bands that are selling tickets, you know, and we will put on the bands that are selling the tickets. So if you want to see a band on a festival, I say get out and get to those small shows. Go, you know, go and if there's a new band coming around, go and see them at a small 300 capacity venue. And you know, if you know, ultimately, if I see a band go around the UK and sell out through a new bands that's suddenly going around selling out all these small venues, they will end up on the festival.
And the case in point right there is the Interrupters.
Yes.
One of the most exciting and incredible bands to happen to our, you know, favourite scene of ska. Like, they've completely rejuvenated it. They're on the cover of Kerrang. They're selling out venues.
Yes.
Thank God for that band.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my favourite new band of the last couple of years. And, you know, we've spoke so much about this band. I mean, they, you know, ska is a scene that, you know,
It's maligned, isn't it? And people love to have digs at it. And it's quite easy fodder a lot of the time.
There's no been new, like, it's gone away and it's kind of, you know, there's no new bands been coming through, and everybody will admit that, you know. And to suddenly have a new band come through,
and
suddenly
and then be good.
Yes, be really good. I mean, I love that band, you know. The few times I've seen them now, it's great, and I hope to have them back. And I hope I just go and listen to some ska. I'll end it.
Well, here's what I'll say to end it, right, is for ages there was no new ska bands, and it is like, oh God, Real Big Fish, Less Than Jake again. But here's what's up, and I say this with all due respect to bands like Enter Shikari and Don Broker, who are human beings and musicians that I love dearly. I do wonder, and time will tell, if they will still be doing sold-out tours every year in 20 years' time.
Yeah.
Which Less Than Jake and Real Big Fish and Bowling for Soup and all those bands are.
Yeah.
That's an incredible achievement.
Yeah.
As much as you want to knock it, that's an amazing thing.
Yes.
All the respect in the world to the aging ska punk rockers around the world. Ben Ray, thank you for all the hard work and just love
and
passion you pour into music, because that festival, I know, is the highlight of so many people that I know's festival and social calendar. It's, you know, it's a glorious occasion every year, and just thank you for all the work that you put in behind the scenes, bringing it to the people, dude.
Thank you. I'm a match, she kerosene. You know she gon' burn down everything. She an arsonist in her pastime, and I've been burned for the last time. Time, whoa. I've been burned for the last time. Time, whoa. I've been burned for the last time. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.